Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life after booze.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I've been alcohol-free for 400 days-ish. Tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Kaylee, and I have been sober for 488 days. And we have a freaking guest today, so I'll let him introduce himself and you'll get to hear what his deal is.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the guest. My name is Vince.
And what's your deal?
Well, I'm 200 days sober. And on the day that we're recording this, which is, what, the 3rd of February? And
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, it's pretty great. Thanks for having me on.
So exciting. So Katie and I have both known Vince for, God, a really long time. Like when we were all, I was 17, maybe, is when I met Katie. I don't know if it was the same age for you or different.
I think I was 19. It was when I first moved back to Oregon from Michigan.
Yeah, I'm not really sure of the timeline. It must have been like, you know, 2010,
yeah,
something like that,
nine or ten.
So it's, yep, it's been a solid 12 years, you know. Why not?
Crazy.
That's, yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, so I think we're pretty fucking excited to have our first guest on, and we kind of got to chat with Vince last night just about his relationship with alcohol and, you know, what it looks like now after 200 days sober. He mentioned that he had never actually counted his days. So he'll have to tell us about that because that's fucking wild to me. It's a new one.
Yeah, we made him count.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I had to go with the flow. It seems like the show always starts out in this way with a count. And I was kind of like, oh, shit, I don't really know.
You're not doing it right.
Am I not doing it right?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, so like, yeah, I didn't really know. And so today when I got home, I like typed in how many days has it been since this date? And it gave me 200. I went, oh, that's great. That's a great number. It's rounded. I'm into it.
Love it.
Yeah. And then Katie's 400. So y'all both, yeah, have round numbers.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It's exciting. 200 days apart between the two of us. And then there's 88 days between Kaylee and I. So
yeah.
There's like a song in there somewhere.
I know. I like the even numbers. I don't think there's an angel number, though, in there.
I still don't know what that
is. I don't know what that is either. I was like, okay. Is Kaylee going to go, oh, yeah, angel numbers. I know all about that.
I actually don't know. We just, well, Vince, the running story with that is I always pretended like I knew what angel numbers were, but I don't know what they are. And you'll find that I do that with a lot of things.
Sweet. So. Okay. I'm into it. That's fun.
I actually quit drinking alcohol on New Year's Day of 2021, and it's the first resolution I've ever fucking done. But it wasn't a resolution, right? Like, I just was like, oh, I'm going to quit drinking for 30 days, and then it just continued from there, so.
I think I have this, like, introspective voice somewhere in my head that I'm never out loud, like, these are my resolutions. Everybody check them out. Here they are. Let me write them down. Dot, 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 dot.
Yeah.
My brain just goes, stop doing that and maybe do this and, you know, fuck off on this for a little bit. That's a good thing. And like, I don't know, just live your life. And then I go through and sometimes I follow through and sometimes I don't. The only person to disappoint is me, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What's one that stands out to you that you've actually implemented?
Exercise. That's just always one that I constantly come back to, being like a heavy cannabis user. There's a lot of laziness that comes with it, so it's trying to motivate myself to like get out and go do a hike, or if I'm feeling kind of like brain stiff or like negatively affected by my surroundings, it's like get out and pump that heart and like get your brain moving and your eye. You know, I think that I have this weird theory where we live in cities where there's tall buildings and you can't see very far. You're always obstructed in your view. And the freedom of being able to see as far as you can see, to me, stimulates my brain like tenfold. I love that idea of being like, oh my God, I can see for miles. Are you fucking kidding me? This is great. You know?
Well, same. Danny, my partner, was listening to some podcast, and I can't remember if it was a neuroscientist or in some sort of related field, where he was saying that if you're feeling really stressed out and you're feeling anxious, you should go somewhere, like go outside, try and spend like your first 10 minutes outside and just like look out and being able to like see in your periphery helps calm down anxiety because mm-hmm. it might have something to do. I might be totally making this up, but being able to like, I don't know, like scanning your surroundings and it's a survival thing, or maybe it's just like opening up your eyes to like receive more light. I don't know. So we'll have to look up like why, but it is definitely a thing.
It's legit. I would say that being outside and finding sun to put on my face is the one of the most helpful things I've done for my mental health in quitting drinking.
Vitamin D is like endlessly good. Like just
yeah,
vitamin D, whether I'm taking it or if the sun comes out for 5 seconds, I'm like, please bask me, just like be on my skin.
It's a big deal. So how is everyone feeling today? Vince, what's going on with you? How are you? It's Thursday evening.
I'm feeling good. You know, just a part of the work week and just excited to be here. It's kind of been something I've been looking forward to all week, and you know, and
us too.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's since being in talks with y'all, I've had kind of a ton of ideas that I've wanted to just bounce back and forth, and you two are so receptive and open. I just can't thank you enough for having me on. It's really cool.
We're so excited you're here. If you are listening to this, Dry Hard fam, go follow Vince on Instagram. His handle is at Magic Marbles with a Z. His fucking content is gold, especially if you're into weed culture or not. Either way.
That's pretty much all I do is weed culture. So if you're looking for that, come my way.
Yeah, I want Vince to kind of give the audience just a, like, paint them a word picture of, like, what you do and just kind of give some background on, like, what your day-to-day life kind of looks like.
I'm just, like, a cannabis cultivator. I work alongside two amazing other cultivators, and we just grow cannabis for the recreational market. It's something I've been doing for 15 years plus. And it's the best work in the world. I've never enjoyed something more. I've never had more heart and soul into something. I wake up every day super excited to go to work. I never have a problem at work. And also, since being alcohol-free, that's really, really enhanced that work as well. It's like bringing true love to what I do, you know, hands in the soil.
I was going to ask, did you hold that position while you were drinking as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, I held it through several different businesses and had, you know, endless amounts of difficult times. So hungover. Those rooms are hot. They're humid. There's a lot of light. You know, it's all the things that you don't want when you're on a huge bender or something.
Fuck, yeah, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's like the worst place you could possibly be. But, you know, I stuck through it and, you know, I learned a lot and I'm always learning more. And it's just a great, great thing to do. So
that's so awesome. I feel like when you think about reasons to drink, my job was a huge factor in how much I drank and when and with who and how like often I would kind of go overboard. And I really feel like taking the time to identify what you like and pursuing that, whether you did it, you know, the whole time, but leaning into that can be really satisfying. I don't want anyone to work a job that they don't get treated well or appreciated. Yeah, I feel like it helps you be more healthy in other ways when you're not constantly under the mental weight of stress like 40 hours a week, right?
Absolutely. Like, love what you do, right? And there's that saying that's like,
live, laugh, love.
Not the Hobby Lobby saying, but like the you never work a day. If you love your work, you never work a day in your life. Something like that.
Something
you
like know, that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some format like that. And I've definitely found a groove. And like I was saying, sobriety really, really amplified that to the point where I'm going to bed early and I'm waking up early excited, which is not something I did for many, many years.
Dude, I've been feeling that. And I know Katie and I have talked about it too, where even if I'm a little tired, I'll wake up at 7 a.m. and drink my pre-workout and then just fucking bump 2 chains and drive to my workout class when it's still dark outside and I'm wearing like a puffy jacket and it's cold. But I just get these moments of like pure childlike joy. And I feel like I'm like in middle school again, getting ready to fucking go see Harry Potter at the mall or something. Like, I don't know. I get like happy.
I'm going to go see Step Up to the Streets by myself.
Yes. It's really funny. It's really funny because I don't love what I do 40 hours a week at all. But I, since not drinking alcohol, have learned to appreciate it and appreciate the stability that it gives me and my family. And I've been able to make changes to what I'm doing for the better of the company and our employees and our family dynamic and boundaries. And so that's opened up a whole new world of actually learning how to enjoy being there.
Good.
Not drinking has given me the confidence to make some changes there and take ownership for my, if I'm not going to be in love with the work, then it's my responsibility to communicate my needs and make changes.
I had a therapist who drilled this fact into me where all you can do is be like, here's what I want and here's what I need. And then it's up to that person to like make a decision and then, you know, either to respect your wants and needs or to not. And then at least then from there, you can make a decision, right? Like if you never said anything, you would just be unhappy the whole time. But if you said, hey, look, here's how I want to do things, and they say no, then it might spark you to actively look for another job, right? But if they say yes, then you get what you want, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah, there's a little bit of leeway there where you can like, oh, okay, this is kind of, I can make this work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and that like taking ownership for your needs, like people don't know to respect your boundaries if you haven't set them. Like we have invisible boundaries that we feel violated by all the time by other people, but we've never actually told those people what our boundary is. And it's like that thing, I just read this long article, so I've been saying this like for the last 2 weeks as one does. You can either be a victim or you can be a leader, especially in your workplace. Like these things can either be happening to me or I can use my voice and stand up for myself and say this isn't okay and fucking leave if it doesn't work for you.
Yeah, which is, I mean,
extremely privileged also, by the right. way.
Yeah, yeah. Just yeah.
You're a fucking victim or you're a fucking leader. No, but that means something to me because I do have the choice and the ability. So
I think of a lot of manifestation. If there's something that I want, you know, a lot of my partners have always asked me like, how do I get you something when you go get all the things that you want? And, you know, I don't know. Don't give me anything. Just be there, you know, mm-hmm. or something. I don't know. You know, like, I don't know how to ask for anything. I've never wanted to raise my hand. So I always take a lot of time to try to focus on what I need. There's a lot of sporadicness, like buying ICP comics today on eBay. Just a whole, I was like, I woke up this morning and was like, I'm buying a whole lot of ICP comics today. It's going to be a lot of money, but whatever. And then there's other sides of me that are much more calculated and try to put my best foot forward in order to get what I want and mm-hmm. to achieve the goals that I want and represent myself in a way that, you know, someone can also recognize me and go, okay, cool. Like yeah. this can work.
You're like, you know? So in your self-worth, right? Like in alignment that right. you don't even need to say the words because your choices are reflecting what you believe you deserve. That is fucking huge. Like you're probably calling in all of the things that you have been putting out in the universe with that kind of self-respect and belief about yourself. I want to know more about that because that's huge. I mean, Kaylee and I have been doing like active journaling and meditation work to achieve higher self. That's something that we're really like into right now.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's going to be like my life's fucking work at this point. Like I'm yeah. having such a hard time, but I've also like, I'm literally living the best life, the best version of myself that I've ever been, the best life that I've ever had. And I've gotten so much, like so much has come to me since I stopped drinking even and just started switching that mindset and like believing that I am deserving of good things happening mm-hmm. like to me and around me. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Same. Yeah.
I mean, that's really great. I think knowing self, knowing there's something inside of you that is worth it, you know, and working to figure what that is, you're figuring out what that is. I think that's endlessly important to know that there's something that you're fighting for. And that's kind of what motivated me is that I'm like, I'm worth it. I can get up. I can do these things. I need to do these things. And if no one else is going to do them, you know, except me. So like mm-hmm. I have to depend on myself. And that's really, really important.
Well, it's like that, you know, the Instagram reels, there's like all of the different voiceovers, but it's that one that's like, no one's coming to tell you today that you right. need to get up and you need to work harder. And it's true. Yeah. And you're like attacked. I'm like,
no one's coming.
I'm like laying in bed with my four chins and I fucking roll across that one and I'm like, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you scroll and it's like some kid with like 150 milligrams of Adderall, like grabbing a cockroach out of a pool. Like.
Or it's Pat God.
Yeah. We have to share our TikTok algorithms, just spend a day like looking through each other's TikToks because I am very interested in that.
I know. Yeah, same. So Vince, we kind of heard from you, you know, why you decided to stop drinking alcohol, but where did this all start? Like, can you tell us from the beginning? You're one of my favorite storytellers, and so I want to hear it.
Well, it's I would think that me drinking stemmed from social situations and how I was like constantly in social situations trying to fit in or feeling like that was the most acceptable way to be. Was to be drinking. Yeah. And I always had this kind of aversion to alcohol. When I was younger, I was straight edge. And then I started drinking when I was like 21 or something.
Tell our listeners what straight edge is.
Straight edge was when I was in, we were in high school, middle school. It was, and previous to this, but it was a big movement of no drinking, no smoking. And no promiscuous sex. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like this movement that was happening that started on the East Coast with hardcore music and moved over to the West Coast slowly. And I had a brother or a friend of mine who had a brother who he came back from the East Coast being there for a year or two. And he was all straight edge. And, you know, we all looked up to him and we're like, he's so cool. He's got a race car and he doesn't drink or smoke. So we decided, let's jump on that boat.
That's so cool, and though.
With no real backing behind it, just being like, he's so cool. We want to be cool, you know. And it that happened for years. And then I started drinking wine coolers, you know, started out right.
Fucking wine coolers.
Yeah.
It's interesting that your decision to be straight edge was based on this person who made it seem so cool, because I, at that time, was shitting on that stuff so much. Same. And it's just great to hear that there was a positive example of someone that you wanted to be like. And I totally assumed that it was just maybe based out of like fear or because you've already seen like the negative effects of alcohol, you know, by the time you were that age or so I just made a fucking bunch of assumptions and I'm pleasantly surprised.
I know. Same.
I love that story.
Well, I honestly thought, and I don't know if this is, I mean, I'm sure this is ego, but I always was like, oh, they just think they're fucking better than everybody else, like the straight edge kids. But I think they kind of thought that.
But I think there was a lot of attitude that came with the straight edge, with straight edge, especially in Eugene. It was like everybody was like, oh, yeah, we're straight. It's just like the people in D.C. were hardcore.
We're fucking
like,
hardcore. Yeah.
Yeah. We're hardcore. Check out how hardcore we are. Like, look at us. Yeah. There was a lot of ego. There was a lot of like, because you're in an environment where everyone is drinking and smoking and doing drugs and all these things. And you're also existing in the same environment, interested in the same topic, same music, same kind of style, lifestyle. But being able to party, still have fun, but not indulge, you know, in those things, you know. I didn't want to be sloppy and shit like that.
You know, it sounds like you had a little bit of a community of people too, which now that I'm thinking about it, I want to bring that back. Like, it is really fucking hardcore to have to stand around in a room with a bunch of drunk people. Like, it is. We just had an episode about wanting to make drinking fucking cool. So I love that.
Yeah, I mean,
it probably saved a lot of people's situations, you know?
You know, a lot of my friends were getting DUIs. A lot of my friends were having all kinds of complications with, you know, relationship statuses, family statuses, mm-hmm. you know, law and just trying to navigate through all of that. You know, there's so much that comes with alcohol abuse that in that time period, in that age range, you know, in that your teens, you know, early 20s, that kind
it's
of a thing.
It's the fucking
like,
worst, yeah.
And when you mix it with like Bacardi or something like 151, or you're just drinking out the bottle because you don't know any better, like, it doesn't make anything better, you know, and you're too young to really, at that point, I felt like I was too young to really realize what the benefits were. So I stayed straight edge. I had a ton of fun, you know, there was a great time. And then when I started drinking, it was a very social thing. You know, everybody was drinking. All my friends were drinking. My roommates were drinking. They were drinking like a 30 rack of, I don't know, like Coors Light or something. Every night they would come home.
Wasn't it like Busch Light?
Busch Light. That's what it was.
I don't forget.
Busch Light Christmas tree and like Busch Light boxes stacked up in the laundry room and like just, you know, just a trash house.
I forgot about that. That was like huge.
Yeah, skate on the countertops, you know, it doesn't really matter, and just kind of like kick the can lifestyle. And it was like a great dynamic, but it also kind of like pushed me in this way of being like, oh, okay, yeah, like they're like, we'll kick you beers because like one or two beers gets you drunk, you know, tall boys. And I'm like, cool. And then that turned into obviously more and more and more. And and benders, you know, just like big long stints of drinking anything and everything.
I was just going to ask if it remained a social only thing or if it started to get to the point, because I was a both. I was like, if there's an excuse to party, I'm going to party socially and go way too ham, but I'm going to go equally as ham by myself.
In my scenario, it wasn't like in my mind, I drank socially. That was like my thing, and I had no limit. So like I would drink. The moment I cracked a beer, there was an inevitable amount of beer, or like an infinite amount of beers after that. You know, I could never grasp or moderate. But when I was at home, you know, in the later years of drinking, I felt like I would feel bad, and I would feel depressed or something from some large bender I was on, or like some crazy thing at a party where I was hungover and my depression was kicking in, that kind of like analog depression you get from drinking large copious amounts of alcohol and doing drugs or whatever you're doing. And you're at home, you know, the next 2 days on your weekend, and you're like, everything sucks, I hate everything. The only way I'm going to be able to like get out my, I don't know, however I was feeling, was like, let's go get like 3 White Claw tall boys and sit at home and like, you know, try to be creative, make a painting, watch Twilight and drink those like as if it's okay. And it, but never did I drink like in succession at home by myself. I never really had beers in the fridge. I only had them around with the idea that if someone's coming over, we're probably going to drink beers, and I might as well have beers because that makes sense.
My question for you is, how many years did that sort of like bender drinking go on for?
I would say easily like 10 plus years of this pathway of constantly partying, constantly finding the party. There's a lot of beer involved in my friend group, and my friend group is pretty wide. I'm not trying to like boast or brag like, oh, I got a ton of friends, but
no, you do though.
And you're a really likable person and fun to be around. But you've also, you know, lived in Eugene your whole life, right, and have made these connections through work and stuff. So there's a good amount of people to be able to hit up on a weekend night and be like, what up?
What is up?
Right. And it's like, it's this in pour of like, hey, come over, we're doing this, or hey, we're doing this, or like, hey, come by for dinner, or like, yeah, any occasion to go out, I would most likely do. And any occasion called for beers, you know, or tequila or gin. I drank gin for a long time thinking I was like smarter.
No, pine needles. Fucking gross.
I had a gin phase. I used to shoot gin.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Like, why?
I was like a soda water, lime, and a Hendrix, and I would drink like, you know, a fifth. I'd be like, I could read a book.
I'm sophisticated.
But, you know, I'm too drunk to like open a book. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole fucking Christmas tree of pine needle tasting.
that juniper, really rich kind of intenseness. I don't know. I dug it for a long time. But same with alcohol. With it seems like with anybody, you go through phases. You know, when Katie and I used to party, we drank a lot of like, not to put you on blast, but we drank vodka cranberries.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was drinking like Jaeger bombs and weird stuff like that. You know, and
do you remember the drop shots?
Oh, yeah. Like Tic Tacs.
We used to fuck up the Tic Tacs.
The Tic Tacs. Wow. No, that's one of the times I threw up was we went to John Henry's and Katie and Michelle got, we put Michelle on blast a lot. Too,
she's fine with it. She doesn't like even have electronics. She's like off the grid. So it doesn't matter if we talk shit.
Well,
she's fine.
Good for her. So.
Yeah. Fucking living my
dream. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't drop her last name, but she knows it. We talk about her. And you all were getting drop shots and it was like a Tic Tac and it was like liquor being dropped into more liquor.
So it was, I'll just explain for our listeners. So it would be orange juice and like orange juice concentrate. Let's be real. There's no actual orange juice with Red Bull. And they would pour you a shot of vodka. You drop the shot into the pint glass and then you chug the whole thing. I would drink anywhere at Cowfish. Because we've talked a lot about the Cowfish. I would, between 6 and 8 a night. And I would throw up and then come back in and just keep going. And that, like, if you think about that much fucking caffeine.
Jesus, yeah.
The sugar.
The sugar, the caffeine. And alcohol.
And the alcohol. I mean, it's this concoction of, it just a very intense concoction. You know, like, that's, it's definitely not, I wouldn't recommend.
Dude, yeah.
So, Vince, we'll put our friendship on blast here. We didn't just have the vodka cranberry, but do you remember the Jameson days?
Oh, yeah.
Jameson, and the Old Crow.
For sure. There was,
$9 fifth.
Yeah, that was disgusting. Yeah. I mean, pretty much whatever could get us by. And since we had a pretty decent-sized friend group, and at one point, a lot of them worked at the liquor store. So we were able to, like, okay, sample bottles or, like, the little single shots or, like, come home with, oh, this fifth of bourbon is nice. It was $9 on sale.
Normally, and like, $14 or whatever. This. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Pinnacle Whipped and smoking weed in the bathroom. Dude. Or, like. Just like,
yes, Pinnacle Whips.
Just the most disgusting kind of display of party drinking, but
it is what it is.
You know, I don't know. There was a lot of great time. It is what it is.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. Well, that painted a great picture. So tell us, why did you stop drinking? What has brought you to where you are? What's going on?
A long phase of internally going, stop drinking. And, I went on these big stints of drinking in the past 2 or 3 years where I don't mean to bring this down, but my mother passed like a year and a half ago or so. And she had a really negative relationship with alcohol that led to a negative relationship with us and my relationship with alcohol. And then when she passed, through the process of like grieving, I thought, why not drink all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and kind of negate these responsibilities and these feelings that I should probably approach and kind of like work my way through. And one night in July of last year, I was on some crazy wild bender. I was ripping around town, you know, just doing terrible things and purchasing drinks everywhere I was going, you know, buying, you know, hard drugs and trying to like party at random people's houses on like a Wednesday or something, you know, like just showing
just
up.
Just show up like,
yeah,
what's up?
Just showing up, just like turned up to the max and going, okay, well, so this night I'd been ripping around town. I saw some friends at a local bar here and had some drinks and then went to another bar, had some more drinks and ordered dinner, didn't eat it. Like left the nachos.
Oh no.
Just left like some nachos on the counter because I was so engulfed in some bullshit conversation. And then, you know, go to the store, picked up a 12 pack or whatever of White Claws, show up to a buddy of mine's house, walk on in, just straight into the house, no invitation or anything.
kicks the door down.
Yeah, pretty much. And he finds me standing in front of his speakers in the living room, just blaring Neil Young on his record player, and he's like, "What's going on, man?" And hey, man, what's up? You know, it's kind of like the idea, and he's like, "We're just having dinner with, you know, my girlfriend and her dad and a friend of ours who's in town. You're more than welcome to come in and sit down." And you know, I'm turned up, And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is like my energy times 50,000. Like I'm very loud. I'm very rambunctious. And so I sit down and I'm obnoxious. I'm annoying them. I'm just not listening. I'm interrupting. I'm all the negative things that happen when you're that drunk.
The magnifying glass is on you too.
Yeah, they're all just like, wow, yeah. Okay. And
it's a nightmare.
My buddy Chris, he goes, hey, let's, okay, come on. It's getting late. We're going to go for a walk. Let's go for a walk. And we go on this hike that we normally do. It's a really nice hike. And I'm wearing essentially clogs, like some Nike Air Force 1s.
Your clogs.
It's like the worst thing that you could possibly do. And I'm stomping around on this tiny trail with him. And he's telling me some stories and we're going back and forth and we're walking, you know, walking up this trail in the middle of the night. And they put some fresh gravel down and it was a short little stint of the trail. And I looked to my left, stepped with my right and slid right off the walkway. And my foot caught a root, snapped my leg, snapped my ankle.
I can't.
And I didn't really feel it. Yeah, sorry.
Trigger warning.
Cringe warning. Trigger warning. Yeah, I broke my ankle. And so, yeah, I just kind of sat down. Yeah, I got a Charlie horse. He sat down next to me. We continued our conversation for a while. He whipped out a White Claw. We drank it. It was sweet. And I went to get up and realized, no, my leg doesn't work. And we're on this hiking trail. It's the middle of the night. This is not a very good look. And I felt terrible. I was like, I was bloated. I felt disgusting. I'd been drinking for, you know, 2 weeks solid of just every night getting tequila shots, every night going out and partying. And so I was feeling just disgusting and he wanted to carry me out. I wouldn't let him. So I hobbled off the trail.
Aww.
Chris ended up calling his partner and her dad to come get me. And they carried me to the house where they uncovered that I had an ankle like the size of a softball and it was all multicolored. And I went, yeah, no, no, we're good. And he's like, no, we're going to the hospital. So we went to the hospital, you know, and I broke my leg. I broke my ankle. They put a bar, like an 8-inch bar and like 8 screws into it. I had surgery, the whole nine. You know, I was responsible enough to have some form of health insurance at the moment, which would not have happened even 6 months prior. And I was like trying to get my shit together, but I was also just crippling with this alcohol thing, just like
grieving without the tools. Yeah.
Yeah. And any positive move I was trying to make was just constantly getting shunned by this like need to drink and party. So, yeah, I broke my ankle. Woke up the next day, was alone in my apartment, single bedroom apartment with just the most insane living situations and had to learn to fend for myself. There was no beer or booze in the fridge. And I just kind of went, all right, well, I think it's time to like reflect and check myself because this sucks. I'm not able to work. I was out of work for 12 weeks. My work was tremendously helpful. The owners of the business are wonderful people. They did everything they could to help and they kept me on. You know, they knew I was good help, or at least they think I'm good help. And you know, they just wanted to help me through it. And I think taking this step also, they were like, okay, well, you're working on being better and being positive and fixing this. Let's do it.
That's so cool. I feel like that's like such an amazing opportunity. You know, it helps that support when you're getting sober or, you know, making any kind of lifestyle change to have a, you know, be backed by who you work for.
Yeah. Yeah. They're so supportive.
I also, Vince, broke my ankle when I was drinking. However,
wow.
I did not go to the hospital. I went to the strip club after.
Great.
And now I've been alcohol free for a year and some months. And it's been like two and a half years since I hurt my ankle. And I'm training for a half marathon right now. And guess what has come up?
What?
I've been waking up limping.
You made it seem like an excited thing.
Yeah, I was like, oh, there's something great here. Oh, no, you're still.
Yeah, no,
still
I've injured. Been fine. And then I've been waking up after my long runs the next day and just like limping the first half of the day. So I have a fucking doctor's appointment next week.
Wow.
Go to the hospital when you hurt yourself.
That sucks. People,
don't fucking try to heal it yourself.
Yeah, just get it done. Like, if you have a broken bone and the surgeon says, you're going to have really bad arthritis if you don't get this, you know, surgery or whatever it is. Like, I just went, okay, yeah, just tell it to me straight, doc. He's like, you need surgery. I was like, straighter than that. Just keep, come on, more. He's like, we're going to give you
just
surgery.
Just slowly, like, put the mask on me and totally. We'll do this thing, yeah.
Knock me out. I filmed a TikTok when I was on they gave me the nerve block. I didn't tell you this, that when I went to get the surgery, I was like, I just watched Dr. Death and listened to the podcast. And
oh my God, I love Dr. Death.
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful, but not when you're about to get the first surgery of your life and you're like,
no, fuck that.
And I'm like, yeah. And all the nurses and all the doctors were like, oh yeah, that show's great. You know, don't worry. It's not going to be like, and it's my ankle, you know, obviously it's not my brain or something. And I'm like, just, you know, give me all the drugs. I'm anxious, I'm nervous. And they're like, okay. So they loaded me up with this cocktail of, I don't know, whatever it was, and
it like gets you loopy enough to be put under.
Yeah, they were like, don't worry, we got you. And I was like, sick. And it got me to the point where I was making jokes. Everyone, you know, I felt like maybe everybody thought I was funny.
You are funny.
And
you're doing a fucking stand-up special.
That's how I felt the whole time. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I have ligma or whatever. And the doctor, you know, flips me over and I'm like a noodle. I'm like, whoa, here we go. You know, and they have this like ultrasound machine. And I'm like, is it a boy? And they're trying to get to like my nerve cluster in my leg, trigger warning. And I'm like, it's a boy. I'm having a boy. I'm so glad. And it's like, it's a, you know, they're like shoving some nasty thing in my leg and numbing everything up. And I'm like, oh, you know, this is great.
I can't believe you were awake for all of that. I was like, ow, ow.
Yeah.
I've had 5 reconstructions on my left knee.
Wow.
I've like ACL, PCL, MCL, and meniscus multiple times. And then they've gone into my right knee to get good tissue. Anyways, it's a big thing. So I've had so many of these operations. My last one was in 2017, and the anesthesiologist was hot, first of all.
I had a hot orthopedic surgeon.
Did you? Yes.
Yeah, and I was single at the time, so I was like,
what's
there
that?
For it.
Coming into my wheelchair.
Fix me. oh, shit, I fell. Fuck.
Dive bomb out, yeah.
sorry. So they put a bunch of rubber bands in your knee.
So the anesthesiologist comes in. He's like, so I've seen you've had some of these before. I'm like, yeah. He's like, you want to do something cool? And I was like, yeah. He's hot. He's redhead too. I'm into that. And he's like,
yeah, Ginge.
Yeah. He was like, let's not give you any sedative before we put you under. And you'll be able to feel what it's like, the closest feeling to what dying is like.
Whoa, this guy sounds like a fucking freak, dude. Choke me out.
Like, yeah, there's some wild shit going on at his house. Don't at me. Like, that dude is...
Anyways, yeah. No, it was great. It was the biggest adrenaline rush you'd ever feel in your entire life. Like, he put the medicine and I could physically feel my heart slowing down. And then now looking back, I think, what a fucking odd thing to do to suggest to a 25-year-old girl. You know what, like... Hey, you wanted to try something cool? It was like he was fucking giving me a drug I had never experienced before, you know?
So weird.
Maybe that's how like most people experience heavy drugs. They're like, hey, you want to do this? And people are like, well, I don't know. And then they do it and they're like, fuck. You know, someone gives it to you in that format.
Yeah, there's always a pusher.
Yeah, first taste is free.
It's funny. My daughter is a 6th grader, and in health, they're obviously learning about drugs and alcohol. And she's like, yeah, we learned today that, you know, when you're at a party, you think some like big bad guy that's like scary is going to be like, hey, try this drug. And she's like, but we found out today it's usually your friends. And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
That's real. That's so real.
That's some real shit.
Yeah. But anyways, it was interesting to hear her perspective on that for sure.
Yeah. I started smoking cigarettes like purely out of peer pressure. Someone literally like put it in my mouth and lit it for me and was you're smoking this. And I was like, okay. And now like someone who's a severe like vaping addict fucking 15 years later, I'm like, Thanks.
Journal about that. Mm-hmm. Be like, thank you.
Yeah, person. We'll put them on our Patreon.
Yeah, we'll also out them. So Vince, we have this rolling inside joke that when we start our Patreon, it'll just be like an 86 page of all the people who have fucked us over in our lifetime. That like, who was the first person?
Like that magazine that you would get at you like in the.
Yeah,
what was it called? Busted or something? And it was all like local people and their mugshots.
It was because someone called me a butterface in my freshman year at high school, and it really fucked me up. And so he was our first feature. He's our first feature on the fucking Patreon.
Well, that sounds great. I don't have anyone to add to the list.
Keep us in mind.
We should also probably be spreading positivity and not like fucking.
I'll throw like Jose
Mean Girls shit, but
I'll throw Cuervo on there or something. He fucked me up for enough. Sure.
I like that. That's a better mentality to have than I want to blame fucking everyone. Okay. Anyways, so that's fucked up about your ankle. How are you feeling now with it? Is it all healed?
Yeah, it's healed up. You know, I have a big, like, big scar down my ankle, but whatever. That just comes with surgery. It hasn't been that long, so there's a long time of recovery. There was a lot of atrophy in my foot, and so rebuilding that and being able to work and walk normally. But, like, I'm, like, mm-hmm. dying to do – I really want to try doing spin classes. My boss's wife, she just picked up a Peloton. My dad has an Echelon. I was like, well, maybe let me buy that from you or something like that, you know. So I'm trying to get into it, but high impact things like running, I'm still kind of weary on.
Yeah,
you know, maybe like what are those things at the gym, like not a treadmill, but like a elliptical, something like that might be more of up my alley, you know. But I'm a huge fan of like old school, like stair steppers mm-hmm. and body work, like weight work. I love biking. That's kind of my next foyer with my leg, is like trying to exercise at home comfortably, and you know, Apple Fitness Plus, spin classes, that kind of thing. Cool. And piece it all together.
So what happened after you quit drinking, after your surgery? What was that like? Did you experience withdrawals? What was that process like for you, physically, emotionally?
Well, I mean, physically it was I went through about a week and a half, maybe 10 days or something, it felt like, of like sweats, feeling kind of like just generally unhealthy, wasn't very interested in food, was kind of just mulling around, you know, didn't have a lot of energy. And after about maybe 10 days, I went out a couple times to like get food with friends or something like that, where they were drinking, and I was also recovering. My leg was, you know, destroyed or whatever, and I wasn't able to really do much, so I was kind of like tired all the time. But there was a period where I felt different. And then after about maybe a 10 or 15 day period, I'm not really sure, I wasn't trying to keep track, and you know, but I started to feel better. I don't know, like I felt my brain started working differently, and I started thinking about things differently. I was approaching situations mentally differently, relationships differently, where I would be kind of torn apart in a relationship with someone, or feel like very, very emotional and like loud about it, and letting my emotions be very erratic. I was able to like stop and process things better. I took time. Obviously, I was by myself, so there wasn't really much getting away from it. So I had to like sit, you know, watching HBO shows and processing this, like, you know, whatever was coming up. And that's the biggest change that I had, was mentality. My positivity went through the roof. I lost, you know, like maybe 12 or 15 pounds in the first couple months. Obviously, I wasn't doing much, but I had really bad sleep apnea, where I wasn't sleeping very well. All my partners would tell me, oh, I think you're going to die in your sleep. And I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I just had like 6 shots and I went to bed. I don't know, you know, like, doesn't make a difference to me. But they'd be like, you are dying. And I'd be like, okay. But when I stopped drinking, like, I was going to bed at a normal hour. I was feeling better and waking up refreshed. Like, I was maybe hitting some REMs. I'm no technical expert, but like, some form of REM sleep where I wasn't getting it before.
That's true, that's real,
and generally I think that helped me kind of face mm-hmm. a lot of it, a lot of the weaning off of the alcohol and sweets too. I ate about 1,000 cookies.
What's your go-to? What's your fave?
Chocolate chip, just like chocolate chip cookies or anything with chocolate in it. I'm very, very game.
Did you smoke weed while you were like getting off the booze?
Yeah, that's another thing. I'm surprised I didn't mention it. Like smoking weed was endlessly helpful. I was stuck, obviously. It keeps coming back to this stuck idea. But in my line of work, I'm surrounded by weed. I'm constantly surrounded by edibles and any format of weed that I could get my hands on. And I smoked constantly. I went from smoking maybe 5 joints a day to like 12 mm-hmm. or 15. Like doubled my mm-hmm. intake. And I didn't really find any detriment to it. Like while I was smoking, it wasn't causing some weird crash or me to feel negative. It just helped me be introspective and slow down and face mm-hmm. my thoughts. There's a lot of like ADD scatterbrain going on. And mm-hmm. I think that weed really helped me dim it down, you know, like kind of slow down, take each thing at a time and work through it, you know, or try to.
I really like hearing that just because I've been beating myself up for my relationship with weed, but more because I feel like I should. Like I'm not a like quote unquote like true person having to like feel all of the horrible feelings of sobriety because I still have this crutch. Not to mention nicotine. But I've been thinking about it and just how there's not like a scale for, you know, oh, I drink 5 nights every other night except for on Thursdays. So let me calculate that. And oh, like ding, 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 like I should fucking quit drinking, you know? Like there's not that for anything. And I think what it boils down to, at least for me, was I didn't mm-hmm. like the way that drinking made me feel physically right. or mentally. And although sometimes I'm noticing behaviors of like me wanting to smoke more often and being kind of like, oh, maybe I should flag that. Like, am I just going to binge literally everything forever and I'll just keep replacing it with other things? But I don't have a problem with the way like smoking actually makes me feel creative and I have more self-confidence and I feel like I'm a fucking cool person, you know? So I don't have that same relationship with it. And so, yeah, I think it's really interesting. Just there's a whole other world of thoughts and feelings when you bring, what do they call it? Cali sober, like California sobriety into the mix. Yeah. I'm just curious, like if you struggled with any of that or like not at all, because I just have a weird anxiety.
Well, I'm a full advocate and I'm also an avid smoker. Like so, you know, there's a lot of like negative connotation that comes with being an avid smoker or like the idea of a stoner. Mm-hmm. And I, for some reason, I still get like high school high. I still get really stoned if I'm smoking a lot of pot, which I'm fine with and I'm comfortable with. You know, it kind of allows me to slow down. I smoke while I work or, you know, like throughout my work day. I smoke in the mornings, the moment I wake up, and I smoke when I get home and before bed. So it's something that's a part of me, but I don't really find it like as detrimental as I did something like alcohol. Alcohol made me feel really terrible, where cannabis makes me feel very normal. I feel like mm-hmm. when I'm not – and this is something that I'm trying to learn to approach or maybe trying to reframe or think in my head is like this idea of – like a low, like when you are feeling depression or you're at a low point, when you're smoking weed, there's a lot of people out there smoking to get high. They're at a normal level and they're smoking and they're getting high and elevated. And when you're at a low, you're smoking mm-hmm. to normalize. You can use it.
Yeah.
You can use it in this format of almost like a mental medicine.
Michelle used to use the word like head change.
Sure. That head change that you get can really be inviting to situations that you might turn away from without it. You know, there's a lot of times where I'm smoking or I'm stoned, which is constant, but I'm doing everything I'm doing in my day. Like I'm getting things done. I'm constantly working. I'm constantly putting my best foot forward in order to like represent myself mm-hmm. as the best person that I can be. And mm-hmm. I think cannabis helps me do that. Like smoking weed is a huge savior to me. And I smoked before, you know, it. And here's another thing with alcohol. It's like, if I was smoking weed heavily, I was less likely to drink as much.
Yeah.
But when I wouldn't smoke, I would like not think about smoking and my day would be a wreck. And I would be like, I'm going to the bar and I'm going to get this. And then I'll smoke weed at the bar. And it turns into this like whole, you know, competitive nature with whatever I'm taking. And when I'm using cannabis in like a simple format like I am, or a consistent format, I find that the world of possibilities has opened up to me. My approach to every situation, if something feels uncomfortable, I'm going to confront it and go, hey, why is this uncomfortable? Let's talk about this. I'm here to level this out. Like, or like, you know, someone is not communicating well. I want to be there and I want to be open and communicate and like use every word in my vocabulary to try to get to bridge that gap, you know, whereas before I would just go, I don't care. Like, move on, drink, like, and party and go, and then, you know, six beers in, we're going, you know, man, that's fine.
Let's
it's
talk
okay.
about this. Yeah.
Let's talk about this now when all our guards are down and we go, we made up but we didn't even scratch the surface of the issue, you know?
Right. I'm reading Holly Whitaker's book, Quit Like a Woman, right now. And she talks about things that you just can't fuck with. And I would be really interested to hear, like, both from you, Katie, and Vince, what your things are, because I do know that there's some people who every time they smoke weed, it makes them want to drink, or smoking weed makes them – I have a few friends, smoking weed makes them so incredibly anxious, so it kind of really throws them off of that path. But for me, and, you know, for you, Vince, like, weed is something we can fuck with. But alcohol is not. So I would just be curious, like, if you had a list of, like, I can fuck with, you know, chocolate, I can fuck with weed, I can't fuck with alcohol, what would those things be for both of you? And, you know, Vince, you can start because you're our special guest.
Oh, all right. Okay.
not to put you on the spot.
Well, obviously, alcohol, I think, is all three of us. It's, like, unfuckwithable. Like, you cannot. Yeah. It's not
an
approachable.
It's our non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable.
NFW.
Yeah.
NFH. NFH, not fucking happening. So, like...
an NFH.
You know, like, there's not much that I overindulge in. Maybe, like, sweets are really bad for me. You know, if I start, I'll eat until I feel bad.
Same.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, too much sugar. I'm trying to stay away. Like, I don't drink soda or anything like that. I drink soda water, but... you know, I cut out energy drinks. That was something that I was really hot on for a long time. I loved Rockstar and Red Bull. You know, obviously any really heavy drugs, not even once. Like, those, my mom kind of raised me in that format. And there's things that I need to learn to mitigate and to use more appropriately or correctly in, like, social situations. Other drugs that, you know, like, just pumping the brakes and being able to wrangle them in is more my biggest issue, is like moderation. It's very difficult. Yeah. You know,
I struggle with that a lot too. Katie, what about you?
My what are we calling him?
Your things you can fuck with and things you can't fuck with. Okay. Yeah, your NNs.
So I'm still kind of debating a lot of that. I kind of, like, live off of the extremes a little bit. So my end goal is to be totally sober, probably. However, what I do not fuck with right now is any form of white drugs. I really liked to do cocaine a lot when I was drinking, and they went hand in hand for me. I was actually put in a situation where I was near it or could have access to it, and I was, like, sweating. I was like, ugh. Okay, so that to me kind of felt like alcohol a little bit, you know? And
you felt itchy.
Yeah, and I'm detested by alcohol now. And so I just know that eventually, the more I say no and I, like, you know, rework those pathways and those memories, those better choices, I will get there. So alcohol, any form of party drug, ecstasy, coke, any hard drugs, like you were saying. I've never dabbled in hard drugs. They were really prevalent in my upbringing. Well, my dad used hard drugs when I was a kid, so I didn't grow up with him in my life. And so that's something that's, you know, not for me. And then I don't eat meat.
Oh.
So that's another one of my nah, dog. It's been since 2015.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, the reason for that has evolved over time. And even recently, I've become more lax where I'm like dipping my toe, like, you know, with fish products and, you know, different things like that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else, Kaylee. Oh, cigarettes. Sorry, cigarettes.
I don't smoke. I mean, I smoke tobacco, but I don't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
I smoke splits with cannabis, with weed.
Yeah, I smoked a pack a day from like the time I was 14 until I was 24. And so my alcohol cut back immensely when I quit smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
They kind of went hand in hand for me. But then I just like forgot about that and then continued to drink heavily. But so cigarettes is on there too.
Yeah. Cigarettes is on mine as well. But unfortunately, the only way that I quit cigarettes was to jump immediately to vaping, which I now do more than I ever smoked in my entire life. I don't feel that elephant on my chest when I wake up in the morning. Like, I feel like things are pretty okay lung-wise, but it's so fucking expensive and it's just not good for me. And I feel really embarrassed when I'm hanging out with my coworkers or, you know, that I like can't get through this fucking podcast without taking a big old vape rip. So I want to work on that. And what I was saying, why I'm like annoying myself, is because I'm immediately thinking of the things that I know I shouldn't fuck with, but that I do anyway. So like negative self-talk, there's like some food shit I need to work on, whatever. But basically the things that I've been able to narrow down is honestly no large groups, no large events where other people are drinking. I've just decided might not be for me.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that might mean that I have to sit out on some live music, you know, maybe an outdoor venue. I might feel a little bit more safe and chill with that, honestly. But just big groups of drunk people make me have panic attacks.
Sure.
So I can't fuck with that. I can't fuck with alcohol. I can fuck with a lot of things. Basically, if I am not drinking, I can fuck with weed. I can fuck with like eating a donut. I'm personally really interested in like psychedelic therapy. So I fuck with that. Yeah, basically, as long as it's not alcohol, I'm pretty much giving myself a free pass. But there's also some vices I need to let go of, or just things that I know will make me feel better if I work on them, like binge eating and stuff like that. Sure. They're in the middle ground of like, I don't want to fuck with you, but I still text you and be like, you up?
Yeah.
You up, fucking Ben and Jerry's?
Yeah, like a whole pint. You know, I see like the Halo tops and I'm like, oh, those are like low calories. I'm not going to buy those, but that's a nice sentiment. Like, here's the Haagen-Dazs or whatever I'm going to grab. Or like,
I did the Halo tops for a while and they just really, they still give me the same stomach ache that sugar does, but it doesn't like, it feels like air. So they're fine. It's just when you're used to the real thing, you know, you can get used to substitutes.
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
I don't really mess with a lot of dairy. I'm not a huge dairy fan, you know. I mean, I guess there's stuff that, like, I choose not to indulge in, like, food-wise. Mm-hmm. I mostly eat just chicken or, like, poultry, you know, wild rices, salads every day, that kind of a thing, just trying to stay on top of it. But I have a huge sweet tooth that's so detrimental to my health. You know, like, I have bad teeth. My parents both have poor teeth, I guess, or something in their family. And
weak teeth.
Yeah, like sugar is not good for them, and you know that's something that I'm trying to realize and face. I hear you on that. You know, social situations. You know, being invited to go out somewhere and do something. It's like, okay, well, is there something that's going to be there that I can find interest in or like have fun with? You know, or does it only have to revolve around drinking? You know.
Yeah.
Because if it's drinking and video lottery, I think I'm out, you know. But if it's like, I don't know, playing pool and squirt guns or something, maybe, sure.
Like, squirt guns.
Like, I don't know, you know.
I was going to say, too, I didn't include those things, but big social gatherings are not my jam. My anxiety has actually gotten more severe in sobriety. I didn't realize I had anxiety when I was drinking. is what it is. Like, I didn't realize I was like breaking out in a rash because I was nervous for people to see me as my whole self. You know, when I was drinking, it was just easy to just cover that feeling up. But now that I am not, I'm like, I'm such a fucking perfectionist, like so hardcore that like it can be really difficult for me to show up places and feel like I'm good enough or perfect enough for everyone there. Mm-hmm. And I really need to be in charge all the time to like give myself some sort of control or to be able to like navigate those social situations. So I've said no to a lot more. And honestly, you guys, I know I say this a lot, but I do so much and it's only because I say no. Like, it's given me so much creative freedom. I have so many side hustles now. I spend so much time by myself. Like, I am living my best fucking life saying no to shit. So that's been really nice for me.
I would say saying no to shit that I don't want to do, I still allow myself to, you know, feel guilt, or especially when it has to do with stuff with family, or that fear of missing out. But yeah, I pretty much, for the most part, do whatever the fuck I want. And that's amazing.
That's a great realization, is like being like, okay, I'm important.
Mm-hmm.
I need to put myself forward.
Yep.
You know, there's a, like with the social anxiety, I deal with a lot of that. And it was like, my goal was like, okay, I get to the bar, I'm anxious about being around people, grabbing a beer to normalize.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have a beer in my hand. And now I still face that anxiety when I'm, you know, when I go see someone. Obviously, the times are different currently, in that it's totally, it's a lot more difficult to have social gatherings. And it's not a very good idea, I guess, right now. So like, the idea is keeping them small and to close friends and family, and like just really just navigating through that and realizing these social situations you can still approach and be strong and be yourself, because you're still wanted there. You're asked, you know, to join. You should be asked to join whether or not you're drinking, and mm-hmm. you should also be able to show up and have the same kind of interests and fun with the people that you love and that you love to be around, with or without the alcohol. I think that I always had this stipulation being like, I'm not as fun if I don't drink.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then I was like, oh, okay, pump the fucking brakes. Hold up for a second. You are fun. You're legit. Like, why the fuck are you holding these standards to yourself? Like, yes. Let's move through this and show up and still fucking hang out and still do stuff that you want to do that involves, you know, your friend group or whatever. I think it's still important, because for me, at least, I'm like, I need social interaction. I'm an Aries, I'm fire. I love people. I love, you know, like connecting with people, and the people I connect with, it snaps click, 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 click all the time. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have that, I kind of feel manic in moments. But being able to come and show up to the party and know that I'm still wanted is always been a struggle. And through my 200 days so far, wherever we're at, I'm realizing that I am still interesting. I'm still okay, you know. I'm okay, and I can be okay with this.
How have your relationships been like with people? Are there some folks who like aren't hitting you up as often, or, you know, are, I feel like you mentioned that you were going out like 10 days after sobriety,
mm-hmm.
which for me, I think I wanted to like hide in a hole for at least like 3 months.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, like how, if relationships have changed, if any, or just, you know, that relationship with yourself and what you're more like willing to do and put yourself out there for.
I think there's a format of like the relationships are changing for the better. You know, the people that,
yeah,
that I'm trying to surround myself with, or I'm, you know, in my close circle of just friends and family that I really love, they're accepting and I'm accepting of them. It, you know, love is a two-way street. So like being mm-hmm. able to go, okay, like it being, just being accepting. And I've had that as like a big resounding kind of an answer, is acceptance, which has been super helpful. I can't thank my support team enough, which is just like everybody in my life. And that 10 days going out, I felt anxious. Obviously, I wanted a drink, you know, and I chose not to, you know. And there's a format of like, I had lunch with a friend of mine who came into town the other day, and we went out to lunch and we talked all day and made this plan to hang out. He was in town, and he shows up and he's like, oh, hey, and like got whiskey to the table. Like, oh, here's a couple shots of like really, really high end whiskey.
Oh shit. So you have to, yeah, that's happened to me.
And I'm like, oh, I'm not drinking currently, you know? And he's like, well, what the fuck? Okay, you bastard. Like, now I'm going to have to take both of these shots. And I'm like,
yeah,
I guess. Yeah. And he's like, all right, fuck it. I guess that's what's going on today. And, you know, it's like there's always that little social gap where you feel anxious about being like, no, mm-hmm. I don't drink. Because how much easier it would be to go, yeah, sure. Like, you know, like how easy could it be to just take it? But I think the reality of it is doing it for yourself and then also being able to like to be comfortable enough to go, no, you know, peer pressure and working against it. There's a lot of times where that's really prevalent in social situations and your best friends will stay near you.
Yeah.
You know, that's super important. And I hear this whole resounding thing of like, you guys have like hit lists or like, you know, whatever this idea of like negative negative interactions and like, and you know, there's still people that I go and hang out with, you know, you get the timeless question of like, you've stopped drinking or like, you're not drinking. Like, how do I do that? Or how do I approach it while they're drinking?
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of repetitive conversation on that and just being able to roll with the punches and understand that, there's going to be social situations that obviously you're never going to be able to control, and nor should you want to. I think controlling yourself is like the most important idea.
I'm relating, Vince, to so much that you're saying. So thanks for sharing all of it. It's not too much. This has been fucking awesome. So
I love the conversation and talking with two like-minded individuals that are on this path. There's a lot of similarities across the board with people.
Well, earlier on, we mentioned expanders, just thinking about the people that have kind of stuck with you and your decision not to drink and who have been supportive. Katie, I feel like you are so much better at explaining this.
It's like keep going back and forth. But an expander is someone that you had in your peripheral vision, whether in your actual physical life or someone that you know and see on the internet or you've read about, who essentially like you got to see to believe what was possible for you through engaging with them or knowing who they were. So did you have anyone who is A, sober curious that you knew, B, that opened up the world of cannabis and just like all of the opportunities that's brought to you, and then just being, you know, an introspective individual and like really, you know, you were able to expose yourself to their dynamics and their lifestyle or their practices that like made it more possible for you essentially to get to where you are?
Absolutely. I mean, as far as like the current with the sobriety in alcohol, like dry hard, both Kaylee and Katie, you both have been tremendously insightful. Everything posted is very relatable. As in general, in moving through life and expanding through like cannabis, Jonathan and Krish, two of my buddies, lifelong buddies, they mean the world to me. They have been so supportive in any format in my life. I don't have brothers or sisters. I'm an only child, but they are the closest thing to brothers and sisters. And then also into sobriety as well. And before that, my good friend Joe. Joe has been endlessly supportive. Him and his partner Kara have created this format of stability in my life where Sundays we get together, we have dinner together, and
I love that.
It's like this Sunday night dinner. We catch up on our week with each other. It's so consistent. It has aided me through while drinking, being drunk there, as well as when I decided to become sober. My sobriety there has just been nothing but support through all four of these or three of these avenues. It's just so supportive, and to having that support is endlessly helpful, you know, and I thank them tenfold, the 50-fold, you know.
Oh,
so
I love that. I can definitely relate to that. I'm an only child too, and so I really cling on to people. I'm a stage four clinger for like love and affection.
Sure.
Katie, Michelle, Ashley, Mackenzie, Jacqueline, they've all just been really supportive of of me doing this. And then even specifically just Katie as an expander with like what she's been doing with meditation and setting boundaries and prioritizing exercise and things like that. I've definitely been like hitting her up for tips and just being like, what do you do? And I'm just going to totally fucking copy you. Yeah.
Copy paste.
I'm just not doing the work. But it's just been so nice to have other people who are going through the same shit, even if we are like different in other ways too. So,
well, and I will hop in here, but Kaylee's been an expander for me because she quit drinking first. I didn't even realize it was possible or something that was deemed acceptable until she did it. And then, you know, she sometimes doesn't give herself enough credit for all of the hard work she's doing. We went on vacation, Vince, together, her and I. We went to Palm Springs to visit my sister in January.
Yeah, I saw that.
She specifically, at dinner, I was like going to just split the bill between myself and other people who were drinking on the trip. And Kaylee was like, you know, actually, like a huge benefit of us not drinking alcohol is that we don't pay for it. And I was like, I need someone like you in my life, you know, who's going to like stand up for me and say, or like, or not even stand up for me, but like show me it's okay to exercise that voice. Because as much of a big personality as I am, and you know how we've talked about like, you know, I command the room, I also really, really badly want people to like me, and I really want things to be easy, and I like good feelings. I don't like bad feelings. And so I will do fucking anything to not feel bad feelings. And so it was really nice to have, it's been nice to have a little partner in sobriety, partner in crime, partner in, I don't know, we have to come up with something fucking cool for our duo. But
oh, this is the fucking best episode ever.
I love that. That's great. It's an all inclusive kind of a support and friendship thing, and that's, it's nice to be able to share. There's been many times where I've messaged the Dry Hard Pod, or you know, like, or Katie or Kaylee, like individually, and said like, hey, I did this thing, and it you know, I don't know, it was a lot, but I didn't drink. You know, I'm not looking for an attaboy or something. I just want to share my experience with someone else who's also experiencing this, like, change. And it just constant positivity, constant reimbursement and of just, like, hell yeah, like, let's go. You're doing great. This is great. And, you know, when you're just trying to work and process through how you're feeling about it or your anxiety about it beforehand, and then having a success story about it coming out in the end and sharing it with someone who also can relate and see those successes and be like, let's go. Oh, that's cool. Fuck yeah. That's tremendously helpful too. Even if it's, you know, 11 PM or something, and I'm just like, yeah, I went to a nice dinner and everybody had drinks and my ex-girlfriend was there and she was wild and hammered, and but it was great. I had a great time. The whole thing was awesome, you know, like, you know, so very supportive. And
I love that.
Yeah. I was going to say too, I've kind of been like diving into this specific meditation practice, which we've talked about on the episodes, and people probably think it's a plug. I fucking wish it was a plug. I fucking wish they knew who I was. But it's To Be Magnetic, Vince. And what I've realized is that so many people doing that practice and in that like self-worth and like deservingness field don't participate in alcohol, and they genuinely believe that alcohol has no permission in the wellness space at all.
Yeah. You know, I heard stories and tales of like this idea of like there's a level of alcohol that drives creativity, but it's like such a small amount. Like Galileo or something used alcohol in small amounts to like fucking Da Vinci Code or some stupid shit.
Right. But now we have like mushrooms. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot more positive ways to approach creativity. Weed. I'm gonna advocate for weed. Number one, put a big weed banner above my head.
Sponsored by.
That's definitely
sponsored
one.
By weed.
Yes, yeah. Shout out to weed.
One of my expanders.
Shout out to this. Yeah. Straight up sidewalks for keeping me off the street. You know, and like, you know, just trying to be just on the right path and staying positive. You know, being positive. no alcohol has caused a lot of positivity, mm-hmm. so I can't advocate for that enough.
I feel that.
Yeah, I remember an episode where Katie and I were talking, and I was like, I don't know how to explain it, but I just all of a sudden kind of feel like everything's going to be okay.
Right.
And I've never felt that before.
Oh, my
and
gosh, so yes. Yeah.
It was mind-blowing to, yeah, just the overall sense of, like, this is all right. Like, I'm going to make it through this, you know, especially with, like, persistent depressive disorder and basically being sad mm-hmm. my whole life.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that's...
It feels really good now. It yeah. feels great. So
the clarity that I've experienced has been so mm-hmm. like open and sound of like resonating sound of like support, like being like, oh, I'm clear enough to process. I'm clear enough to recognize that I'm feeling this way and instead mm-hmm. of depressive and oppressive on myself by shutting down and resorting to ways of like negating my mentality. Negating who I am, negating who I want to be and how I want to be presented by just like liquefying any social situation to mm-hmm. be fun and never approaching negative, never approaching seriousness, always making a joke, always having a shot. And like the difference is night and day.
I totally agree with you. And I was going to say too, for anyone that's listening, earlier we were talking about how my anxiety is heightened. Well, something I'm learning about myself is that I took away alcohol, right? So now I have these big feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that can feel really scary. And I think that it's about the work we're doing with those big feelings that we couldn't do when A, you didn't know you were fucking having them. And B, you didn't even have the ability to reach for tools or ask for help or, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
you didn't have the chance to even dig beneath the surface on all of that stuff. So I definitely don't want to like, I have had a couple of people ask me like, my anxiety is just so bad when I don't drink. Well, it's like, don't drink so you can handle that. Like, what can we do to help anxiety? What can we do to relieve those, you know, stress? And, you know, Kaylee, like you've talked about, like medication doesn't fucking work when you're consuming alcohol. It actually does the opposite.
Yeah.
There's no, the lows are just so much more low when you're drinking. When you're not, the lows are there and then you fucking come back up.
Yeah. And the tools just fucking fall yeah. out of the sky. You're like, oh shit, I like this. I'm going to yep. keep doing this. Like, I just feel like a whole other world like opens up for you. And I don't know about you both, but I've been feeling like just a lot more introspective and not wise, but like
you're wise.
Kind of. Yes, I feel like
are.
An old, like,
we both like, are. So is Vince.
You both have a lot to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle came over and read my Mayan astrology chart.
Oh, cool.
And I was the owl, which is wise. And then in my human design, I am the wise sage as well. So I'm going to fucking rock that title. I'm not going to be ashamed of it.
Do it.
Yeah. I feel like I'm five. I've gained like 5 years yeah. of wisdom in the 1 year of sobriety I've had. I'm like floating outside of my own body, like holy shit. And I sound like I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, and maybe because I'm just more yeah. stoned all the time, man. Sure. Like yeah. who knows, but it's good. It's I don't know, I feel like I may not have the answers, but I know like that they'll come to me, and I feel more like at peace and shit. I don't know, it sounds so cheesy, right. but it's good.
Just being like you're saying with the Katie, with the big big emotional
raw
waves.
Dog in it, yeah,
like large, like, yeah. yeah, I don't know if I'm raw dogging my emotions, but I'm able to go, hey, that's a fucking tsunami, like let's see if I can rip yeah. it, you know, like that, like just trying to approach it and knowing that I'm strong enough to go, okay, well fuck it, like what's the worst that can happen, mm-hmm. like I say no, not yet, like, or you know, at least I'm putting my yes. toe in the water, and that's so important, is to like have that clarity, that strength to go, okay, these are the problems that I'm seeing. I can't pick up every stick at once or like, sure. you know, I'm not able to do it all at once, but I can approach this and then I can approach this and try to take some kind of pathway to rehabilitation yeah. in my mind through dealing with those big waves.
And something yeah. too that, you know, I probably read on Instagram somewhere. It's a theme. Is that like we are not we're not a work in progress, right? Like, we're not a project. We don't constantly need to be fixed. Like, we existed as this person before life happened to us. We're just working to get closer to that, like, authentic person before all that shit and all that trauma and all of that fucking, like, you know, self-hatred and all that got put on you.
Yeah.
And so right. Sometimes when I feel like I had this conversation before, like, dude, when do I have to like stop working on myself? I'm so tired. It's like, I actually get to also just enjoy being myself and having fun. I'm really right. trying to be a little bit lighter on myself, right? Like, I don't work out because I'm working on myself. Yeah. That's good for my fucking mental health. Like, it's a practice of mine. I'm not even meditating to do work or to change. I'm doing it because it is a ritual that exists in my day and it brings me closer to who I and what I like about myself. And so, like, kind of using that mm-hmm. language instead of always being like, I'm fucking working on myself. I'm working on that. I'm working on that. It feels exhausting and like it's not a privilege to be able to do it, you know?
Yeah, I think that working on yourself constantly is always mm-hmm. important. I don't really see an end in sight, nor am I looking
for
an
end. Yeah, that's what I mean.
End.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's times where I'm like hit the joint and go, well, fuck that shit. I'm watching TV for 4 hours, you know, because I...
Dude, I'm going to watch TV after this. I'm committing to that
tonight. Yes, I was going to say, like, that's okay, too. Like, you're not a bad person if you want to binge watch a fucking, you know, television show.
You are your own person. Like, make your own decisions and don't let this societal judge or this larger idea of, like, and I'm not trying to, I am not a preacher by any means, but, like, this idea of, like, don't let this larger society of, like, you can't watch, you can't sit and binge, you can't fucking eat, you know, do what makes you happy, because at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, is you and you being with yourself. And, like, being so upset or finding so many complications in the small things, you're seeing, like, the tree line for the forest. Like, you take these times to be like, I'm so critical on myself. There's so many days, like, let's not put an end to it or a timeline. Like, we need to adjust. Like, be in yourself, be there, and, like, feel those emotions, process them, and go, these things make me feel good. That's what life mm-hmm. is about, is feeling good. Let's fucking feel good. And if you're not feeling good, then let's steer away from that. Like, swerve on all of that bullshit and, like, don't let that approach you. Yeah. Like, I don't know. And realizing what those are and going, okay, pump my brakes. Like, I'm not going to do that. And I don't have time for that. And I'm not ready for that. Or that's not what's going to happen right now, because I'm going mm-hmm. to do this, because this is how I
love
feel.
That.
And sometimes sitting with yourself in those moments of being like, I know I need to go do this, but, like, that's just not going to happen right now. So here yeah. I am, and that's okay. Let's see why. And then maybe in 2 hours, I'll go, okay, let's go. Let's get up. Let's move. Let's do these things, because I've taken that time to check myself. And it's always important, is you are important.
Yeah.
You know, don't doubt yourself.
I don't know. And this is like, Kaylee, how the fuck does he think like that and feel that way about himself? It's so good. Like, it's so good. And I want more of that, because it's something I struggle with, is yeah. always being hard on myself. And I don't know. And this is, I'm not saying I think this. I'm just saying, putting a suggestion. Do you think it's the male-female condition difference, Kaylee?
It's so hard to say, because it could be so right. many different yeah. things, right? Like, there's so many catalysts to make us the way that we are, but I don't know. I'd be curious, Vince, to hear what you think, but it is hard, and it's something that Katie and I are still both working on. So regardless of how we, like, how far up our asses we may be now, like, it's just so good to talk to you, and I think we could use, like, more sessions with you, because it's fucking yeah. awesome, and it just seems like, I don't know, we all have our parts that are harder for us than others, right?
Right.
So the more we talk to each other about them, the more we can, like,
work to process.
Yeah, be my life coach.
Yeah, like, tutor me on how to do that. And all
this actually is now a paid partnership. So
yeah, Magic Marbles, yeah. hit me up. I'm here for any type of no, absolutely. I think these kind of conversations need to be had. And I do agree, there's, especially with social media, especially with like how addicted we are to our phones. I know, I know Katie is doing a lot of like working with companies or advertisement and using social media in formats. And like, I have a scrolling addiction, you know, and I try to fight myself on it.
It's so hard.
And there's moments where I take times to scroll and there's other moments where I don't. And then there's moments like, you know, I had today where I posted a video and then my brain was so scattered that I kept checking my phone and I ended up having to take my phone and distance myself from it in order to get other things done because there's a form of addiction.
Dude.
And with that, like, comes negativity.
Yes.
I think that there's a lot of female negativity online. You know, there's image and bodywork and beauty and all these different formats of like sexuality and
productivity,
like
hustle,
you need
culture.
To be hustling, you know,
boss bitch.
But like these are all formats of like, they're just like neon signs. Like, the work is within yourself.
Yeah.
You need to work on yourself, and maybe someone being a hustler and getting fucking seven figures and like has, you know, a fucking house in Cabo. Like, if that is like the interesting yes, goal or whatever you're looking for, like there's, you know, there's a lifestyle to that, and seeing someone else's lifestyle is always invigorating, but your own lifestyle and approaching things in the way that makes you feel comfortable is, I think, my best option.
Yes.
Like, people are pushing me to do the Pack God, do this, make this, do. But I only have so much time in the day for Pack God. And I'm only allowing that because that's what I want. If it becomes unhappy, I'm not trying to do that. You know, things should stem from positivity. And if it's a couple hours of me sitting on the couch instead of doing the Pat God thing or whatever the task may be, so be it. I need me.
Yeah.
You know, like, no matter what anybody says or what Instagram says or fucking whatever.
Totally. Well, and that's something, too, that I've been reading about and learning about is that when you're chasing after goals, right? When you're grasping at things all the time and you are putting off this energy like there's not enough for every fucking person to go around, there is enough. There's an abundance of that shit that exists. Like, but what part of it is right for you? The part where you're co-creating with what's happening. It shouldn't feel like I'm sitting on my couch comparing my life and hating myself. That's not, that's a lack mentality. That's not this mentality that there's enough to go around and that I am enough and that I'm in my self-worth and that I am able to do whatever is in my path. It looks different from everyone else's. And so that is just, I 100% agree with you.
Oh, I think that was so well said. Yeah, a comparison is the thief of joy, which is one of my favorite quotes. And also social media, just like alcohol, right, is formulated to be addictive. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we beat ourselves up about something that's insanely difficult and is engineered to have us have those behaviors, right? So
we talk with Iris about that. That's like, hey, kiddo, when you're mad at us because we've asked you to turn off YouTube, try to remember that someone designed it so that you would be mad that you can't watch it anymore.
Right.
Like, that was done so someone can make millions and billions of dollars. It's not your fault and it's not our fault. And, you know, we just have to think bigger outside of that. You know, this was developed to change your self-esteem, to give you dopamine hits, to get those endorphins running, you know? And that's a whole nother conversation for an entirely different day.
Yeah. One thing is just don't blame. Mm-hmm. Don't blame and ridicule yourself for inconsistencies. Like, just work. If you have these issues, work.
Put your phone on the fridge, out of your reach, right? Like, that's it.
Sometimes you don't have the energy, but just know that when you do, that it is something to approach.
Yeah.
And that's all you can do is just take the time. Like, you don't have endless amounts of time in the day to do everything. And don't overburden yourself. No, we don't. We fucking don't. We still need to sleep and eat and like and look out the window and read a comic or do the newspaper or word jumble. Like, there's I love word jumble. So, but like, you know, just know that you are worth it and you're working for you and the people around you because there's so much out here. Like, my homies, like all my friends and family, I love them so much and I work for them. I work for myself for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I can't show up to the table with anything to bring, then why am I at the table? Like, where's my value here? And my value is me. I exude love because I love these people and they exude love and I should be able to receive it as I'm giving. And like, love is a two-way street always. We should work in tandem with each other to express to each other that we're both important, to reach out and go, I see you, you're important. Let's move through this. Or like, yeah, let's go. Like, you know, whatever we need to do, you know, like pick your homie up, let's go. And just remembering that you're something, you know, and that's what gets me through every day, is like being like, okay, I'm going to go show up to this because fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it doesn't have to be like 100%. Like, there's like low energy and high energy days. And I think I've been really trying to be like, okay, if it's a low energy day, then I can get caught up on my knitting and get caught up on my show, and I can fucking make tea and I'll let myself, like, you know, just go to bed early.
Yeah.
But if it's a high energy day, then I try and ride that wave and, you know, just kind of go with the flow more of like what I'm feeling, instead of feeling like I have to be at exactly 100, not 110, not 90, like every single day, you know,
being open to acceptance, accepting. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not having someone else accept you, but you accepting yourself in those moments of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm uncomfortable with what's going on, but I need to accept that this is what's going on and process it. Because if I negate it, then I'm doing everything that I was doing before, just pushing things away. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
Yeah, agreed.
That was a good fucking conversation.
Yeah, great job.
Hey, Vince.
Hey, Katie.
Hey, thank you so much for being here with us tonight. So fucking excited about this and what you're doing and your life and who you are. Like, so appreciative. So glad to connect with you, you know, 12 years later, which is, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, so what would you, if someone asks you, what's the first step to stop drinking? Like, what would you recommend? What's your one piece of advice for any new person that's like sober curious, you know, ready to get on the wagon?
I think that, and I'm always really blunt with this question. I get asked it frequently out when I'm out and about with people. It's to start.
Yeah.
Just to start. The biggest thing that you could do for yourself is to start. If you're planning on doing something, if you're trying to quit, it's to start somewhere. Like, don't put it off for tomorrow. Don't have your pack of cigarettes and go, when this pack's done, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Just start. Start. And that, you know, and understanding that starting somewhere, what's the worst that can happen is you drink again. Well, you're putting your toe in the water, and that's what's the most important thing. Is you can always look at something on the top shelf, but getting up on the stool and reaching for it is the first step in order to get your goal.
That's so cute.
Dude. Vince is like the metaphor, the analogy person that we need.
I'm like,
because Katie and I suck so bad.
Like, get yourself a stepping stool. Are you fucking kidding me? That's adorable. Thank you so much for that. You're the best.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm endlessly appreciative of this conversation and just being able to express with the two of you and to anyone that's listening to. Like, it's a wonderful thing, and I hope that other people can share this experience as well.
Yeah. Yay. That's our episode.
Woo. Woo. Full circle.
Yeah, woo.
Woo. Woo. Woo.
Yeah.
Where is the Juggalo gathering?
Yeah. There's a lot of conversation.
Yeah.